Tired of the same old sports analysis? Then you need the SMQBs podcast. They're five attorneys, they're sports fanatics, and they're ready to make their case. Welcome to Sports Talk with an Edge. From Dallas, Texas, Ryan Pope. Michael Rooster Phelan from Richmond, Virginia. Patrick Milk Meichler from Tampa. Toby House Milrod from Philadelphia. Chris Bison Nace from D.C.
Sunday Morning Quarterbacks, Episode 3, Super Bowl Week. We're going to get some hot takes on the Super Bowl, starting with Philadelphia's own Toby House.
Good to see you guys. Good to see you guys. Good luck this week, Milk. You got a home team. There's absolutely no reason you should lose this game. But let me tell you what I think are the keys to this game. I think for starters, you know how Tampa's defense feasted last week on Aaron Rodgers because the left tackle is out. Well, it's deja vu all over again. Eric Fisher's out. Left tackle is out. The right tackle, who is also a fill-in, is moving over the left tackle. So my first number is Mahomes 3.5 sacks, over or under. If it's over 3.5 sacks, I think the Chiefs are in trouble. That means they've contained him within the pocket and they've got him on the run. If he keeps it under 3.5 sacks, that means he's out of the pocket. He's scrambling. He's at his best. Second, Brady has not had great fourth quarters of late. He honestly was terrible in the fourth quarter against the Packers. I can tell you he was terrible in the fourth quarter against the Eagles in Super Bowl 52. If you want to walk down memory lane on that.
No, thanks.
Watch Brady's fourth quarter completion percentage and quarterback rating. If it's poor, the Bucs lose. Third, if the Chiefs time of possession is greater than 25 minutes, they're winning the game. And the reason is not because it keeps Brady off the field, but the Chiefs are quick strike team. They, have long bombs to Tyreek Hill, to their speed receivers. But if they start doing sustained drives and they can score either quick strike or long sustained drives, I also think the Bucs are done for it. The Brady quarterback has to be better than the Bucs wide receivers. I feel like as of late, Brady's throwing the ball up and he's letting his wide receivers make the play. And the best catches in the game against the Packers were phenomenal catches by the wide receivers. But I don't think you can count on that play after play after play. I think Brady has got to make the throws that are there to the receiver, not the receiver making phenomenal catches. But in the end, Tyreek Hill is your MVP. He turns it on again, and the Chiefs win Super Bowl 55, 38-27. And Milk, I'm right here with a hug for you. With your hug.
Wow. That is painful to hear.
All right, that's your take from your Eagles fan. Let's walk it backwards in NFC East Super Bowl winning teams, and that brings up Rooster.
The last team to beat Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, I believe. Am I wrong about that?
There's a team called the Eagles.
Are you really doing this to us?
I'm just kidding. Hey, Milk, is AB going to be playing in this game?
I think he'll be back.
Oh, okay. All right. So, look, I struggled with this because the Chiefs looked so overwhelmingly good against the Bills. But, guys, as Brian has been saying all year long, guys like Tyreek Hill are up and down a lot. Tyreek Hill is not as consistent as he could be. And I agree with House that time of possession is
going to be
very important in this game. Because if you think about it, the Chiefs have the number one passing offense this year. The Bucs have the number two passing offense. The Chiefs don't run the ball. The Bucs do. The Bucs have a really good offensive line. In fact, I wish the Giants had taken Wirtz over time. That guy is a damn good pass blocker. And they just have a good offensive line. And I just think playoff Lenny is going to be the difference in this game. I really do. The Bucs are going to run the ball. They're going to run to set up the pass. And their defense has got to tee off on a right tackle playing left tackle and a second string right tackle. I do think that JPP and Barrett are going to have big games. And I'm going Bucks 31, Chiefs 28.
Wow.
Wow.
Yep.
There you go. There you go.
Pope from Big D. What do you got?
Well, you know, here I am in Big D, reminiscing over a quarter century of not being in the big game, and it's quite frankly getting quite tiring. I've got five Lombardis behind me, if our fans could see, and I'm
a lot of cobwebs on those Lombardis.
Right? Yeah, it is. I'm kind of living in the past here, but I tell you what, I think in breaking it down. You're right, Rooster. I've been up and down on Tyreek Hill, which is why I may have traded to your fantasy team at some point during the year. But I do think that he is going to be impossible for them to contain. He's taken it to the next level. If you look at their Week 12 matchup, which Kansas City won 27-24 in Tampa, basically this is a repeat of that game. Tyreek Hill was 13 catches for 269 yards and 3 touchdowns. They could not come close to stopping him. So let's say hypothetically they sell out to try to stop Tyreek and put a cover corner on him and a spy or whatever else they want to do. The X factor here is going to be Mecole Hardman. Yep, same guy who dropped a punt resulting in a quick touchdown and for Buffalo and a 9-0 deficit for the Chiefs in the AFC Championship. But once Hardman got legs underneath him, you saw what he could do. He's another Tyreek Hill in waiting. If they sell out for Tyreek, Hardman's going to burn him. Tampa Bay's poorest pass defense all year long is their Achilles heel. Mahomes is not the player that you want to go up against in this situation. Even if, again, let's say they stop Hill and they stop Hardman, you got Travis Kelce, and he is almost impossible to contain, especially on third down possessions. I see Kansas City eating up plenty of clock, scoring at will. I don't have this as a close game. I have this as an old-timey Super Bowl blowout. I got the Chiefs 37, and I got the Bucks 13.
Wow. Mm.
Just insulting.
Unbelievable. Wow. All right.
Wow.
All right. Well, it's been a little while since we've had a Super Bowl championship here in Washington, but nevertheless, we are the District of Champions thanks to our other teams. I do not see how the Chiefs can lose this game. I don't see it. Okay.
Wow.
But
would you give it a 0%
chance? Some might say there's a 0.00% chance, but I got to say this. Look, this is actually, to me, going to be a lot more intriguing than it maybe I thought it was at first. The Bucs defense stopped Aaron Rodgers. They stopped Drew Brees. And before that, they had to stop the legend of Taylor Heineke. Was that his name?
Oh, you're talking about Saquon for a minute.
Heineke, yeah, Heineken, Pool, or Pond. Heineke.
But
beer man.
That's nothing to sneeze at, right? I mean, stopping those quarterbacks. There's something about that defense. But then add in that there's some statistic I saw this week that Mahomes' stats when he's flushed and running are like better than 85% of the quarterbacks in the NFL. Like, he might actually be better than himself when he's running and out of the pocket. But mix in that they're down a tackle. In fact, I think they're down both of their starting tackles from what they were thought they were going into the season. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, with the Mahomes stats, I don't know. Maybe that's a good thing for him. Maybe he's better when he's running all over the place. So I don't know. And then for me, the home field advantage. You cannot look at this too lightly as what it means. These guys are home. They're in routine. They've got their wives looking over them. They got to be home every night. They're not out there partying like the Chiefs. The Chiefs are waiting to be anointed. I cannot see the Chiefs losing this game, but I'm going Bucks 39-33.
Wow. Win for the Bucks?
For the Bucks. Ooh, I'm doing it. Disgusting. I can't. Oh my God.
Wow.
It doesn't. The brain says no way. The heart says that's where we're going. Wow. Hometown boy. It's your week, Patrick. It's your week, Milk. We're all just living in it. What do you got?
It's a gut feeling that I have. The Bucks are going to win it.
Yeah. Let me start off by saying how cool it is to be hosting the Super Bowl when your team is in it. This city is like completely come alive. Everything is set up down by the river, Hillsborough River, that goes through downtown Tampa. We were down there yesterday, took the kids down there. I mean, it's crazy. It's starting and it's really weird. And the Tom Brady, I mean, it's supposed to be this, you know, completely equal, no bias towards home team, but I mean, it totally is. I mean, it's just Buck stuff everywhere. So it's been a pretty cool, it's going to be a cool week. I go back to, look, when I'm looking at two teams playing each other, my first thing is, did they play each other in the regular season? Yes, they did. Did we get dominated in that game? Yes, but really just in the first half. Once we learned that you can't put Carlton Davis in man-to-man coverage on Tyreek Hill, and, you know, I go back to that at the end of the second quarter in that game when they showed Carlton Davis on the sideline literally about to cry, like his head down. I think at that point Tyreek Hill had backflipped into the end zone after his third TD, and that pissed off our defense. And I will say, in the second half of that game, we came back. We outscored him 17-7. We got to Mahomes. We had a forced fumble on him. He threw two picks in the second half, both called back due to penalties. One was a stupid offsides that it didn't affect his throw or anything. And the second one was a late hit by JPP, which was a very questionable call. So we got to him, and that game completely changed the Bucks. We were 7-5 after that game. The doubters came in. We went into a bye week. We have not lost since, 4 in a row, 3 now on the road in the playoffs. It's a different team. This team is now gelling. The offense is gelling. The receivers are gelling with Brady. I mean, I think you saw that last week in the Packers game. I mean, just the timing was there, which was a huge problem, by the way, in the beginning of the season. He and Evans were not on the same page for most of the first half of the year. And you saw that in the first touchdown last game, just the timing of the jump, all of that. It's a different team. I think this is going to be a really, really hard game, no doubt. Mahomes is unbelievable. Never going to question him. They've got Kelsey, Tyreek Hill. Their defense is okay. I mean, it's nothing, you know, spectacular. But it's going to be a battle. I think at the end, I think we're going to come, it's going to be close. I'm seeing a field goal. You know, I'm seeing a last minute defensive stand, maybe an interception to close it out with a couple minutes remaining. But I see a 21-17 kind of outing here. Obviously I'm going with the Bucks.
Wow.
Wow.
That is low. That is low scoring.
You know very little about the word Kinahara or superstition. You're toast.
And does the Jose Gaspar blow up if you guys win?
I'm going to be swimming out to it.
this is going to come to Ryan suck up or no?
Absolutely. Wow. And he kind of won. I mean, look what he did last week.
Does your team thinking who would be, if there were was a spy on Mahomes, who would be your spy on him?
I don't know. Maybe
figure it out by Sunday.
Okay. Somebody better figure it out.
You're gonna need it.
Who's your backup quarterback?
You gonna put a spy on Mahomes and not Hill?
Blaine Gabbert, man.
Is it really Blaine Gabbert?
It is Blaine Gabbert.
I mean, backup quarterbacks.
You don't want him in that game, okay?
Chad Henne versus Blaine Gabbert.
Yeah. By the way, Winfield coming back. He'll be full strength. We lost him. Didn't have him in the Packers game. AB will be back, although, honestly, I may rather have Scotty Miller than him. Whitehead will be back. We'll be at full strength.
Defense wins championships.
How about the head coaches, Andy Reid versus Bruce Arians, two of your dinosaurs in the league?
Both high-risk guys, too.
Manage Big Red.
Bison, I think this is going to be like the Chris Smith Super Bowl for the football team. Was that his name, Smith?
No, Timmy Smith. Timmy Smith, yeah.
It's going to be they're going to run the ball. They're going to run it down their throats and control the clock.
Don't discount Ronald Jones and Fournette.
Yeah.
That combo has come alive.
I have a theory about how to stop this home field advantage thing, because it's real. I mean, this is really, well, we're going to find out, I guess, how real it is. But I have a theory of how to stop it, right? So you rotate between the East Coast, the Central, and the West Coast, and you play the East Coast games in Jacksonville whenever you have to go there for a Super Bowl. You play the Central games in Dallas whenever you have to go there for a Super Bowl, and you play in L.A., whenever you have to go there for a Super Bowl. That'll assure that there'll never be another team playing in their home stadium again, because none of those three teams are going to a Super Bowl for a long
time. Don't ever play
again. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Let me just ask you this. How many of you guys are excited about The Weeknd playing the halftime show?
Is that – I thought that the Super Bowl, band? The Super Bowl takes place on The Weeknd, right?
And it takes place on The Weeknd, and it's the halftime show.
Is that like an old boy band? Who's The Weeknd?
Oh my God!
Pope definitely doesn't know.
Don't ask Pope.
Definitely doesn't know.
If it's not Pete Townsend or Springsteen, I don't know who's playing. Yeah.
So, Toby, I do think that since it came up, Andy Reid, and you gave the advantage to him, you would know because you're an Eagles fan, and I do have to. I mean, how are you feeling about your head coach this week?
First of all, I'm still not sure I know his name.
Does anybody know his name? I don't know his name.
Reek. After that press conference, I think his name is Reek.
You know, you guys know how they do that thing at the NFL. You know how they do that thing at the NFL combine for the players, and they do the Wonderlic test to see if these guys have any smarts so they can play in the NFL? Apparently, they don't give that to coaches. I mean, this guy, that press conference made me want to hide under my desk. Unfortunately, our owner has this huge thing. Jeff Lurie has this whole huge thing on the EQ, you know, the emotional quotient of a coach. That's how you relate to today's players. He might have an EQ off the charts. I'm not sure he has an IQ. He's a numbnut.
You know who he reminds me exactly of? Jim Zorn. You remember the Jim Zorn experiment in Washington? Look, they started out like 6-2. Everyone, the guy was trying to do fight songs in the locker room, and the players were looking at him like he was nuts. And it went really south really fast after that. But that is exactly who I was thinking about watching that presser. I was like, oh, this is Jim Zorn. This is going to be a lot of fun for me. I'm looking forward
to it. I'll just say this. In case any of our listeners didn't hear week two, go back and listen to the Rooster on week two and the NFL's race problem, and you'll understand, you know, there are a lot of coaches who right now should be pretty damn pissed off that they didn't get a crack at this, because this guy was a joke.
Jim Zorn with about 1/10 of the public speaking ability.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Any last words on the Super Bowl? Milk, you got anything? I mean, it's your funeral, man.
I just want to somehow get in the stadium and not leverage my kids' college education doing it. The prices are the COVID related prices are ridiculous.
So for our listener out there, if you have access to the Super Bowl, call Patrick. He's dying to get it.
Please. Y'all set up a GoFundMe.
Oh, that's a brilliant idea.
I'll put five in.
Get Patrick $5 to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Yep. Put me down for $20.
Thanks, buddy.
Anyone
else? All of our listeners pitch in, I'll have about $400.
Look, I may have predicted a blowout for the Chiefs, but I'm pulling for my buddy Milk's bucks.
Thanks, buddy.
But if we have to come back and do a podcast with Patrick celebrating a Super Bowl win, I don't know.
There may be a tune in next Monday for the if we win that game. If I'm alive,
there may be a stand-in guest for me.
Yeah, I know.
Man, this is what I was talking about last week. Can't you just be happy for your friend?
Yeah. I'm happy for his children.
I picked them. I picked
37-13 Chiefs. That's all I heard.
That's right.
All right, House. On to better coaches out of the Philadelphia area.
Yeah. So, listen, I'm really hoping that we don't get in this habit on this podcast of pouring one out for great ones. But I think the coaching fraternity really lost a great one this week. One that's a little bit under the radar, but John Chaney, the longtime coach of the Temple Owls, died this week at the age of 89. And a lot of folks say that amongst the black coaches of NCAA basketball, there's kind of this triumvirate of John Thompson and Nolan Richardson and John Chaney as the greats. And, you know, if you don't know Temple University, it's basically a commuter school. It's a commuter school with a lot of minorities. They don't have a great recruiting ability. Ever since the Nova championship team of, you know, the 80s, they didn't have the ability to recruit the very best. And Chaney took kids that were, you know, afterthoughts for other teams, and he made them incredible. He was inducted into the College Basketball Hall of Fame, into the Pro Basketball Hall of Fame. There's some pretty unbelievable stats about Chaney. He had 7 Atlantic 10 regular season championships. He had 9 players to win the Atlantic 10 Player of the Year. He had 16 NBA players to played at Temple under him. He had 17 NCAA tournament appearances during an 18-year stretch. That's pretty unbelievable. From 1984 to 2001, he missed the NCAAs 1 year, including in that was 5 trips to the Elite Eight. I think most Philadelphians are upset that Chaney never got that Final Four, but he had basically a matchup zone defense that was killer. He loved to win ugly. He loved to coach kids about life as much as he did about basketball. His players are unbelievably loyal to him. And, you know, in terms of losses that we've had in the Philadelphia sports arena, this was a big one. This was a big, big, big one this week. And I think it's not just for Philadelphia, but really for college basketball and for the sport of basketball. I hope his stories, his coaching style will be remembered and will be passed on. The current coach of Temple now is one of his greats, Aaron McKee. And I really hope Aaron McKee carries out his legacy and carries on the name of John Chaney. So today the SMQBs are pouring one out for John Chaney.
John Chaney.
Boy, he was always a tough out in the NCAAs. I can tell you as a Tar Heel, we had a couple big games against him and regional final. Temple almost beat Carolina to go to the Final Four. So much respect. Pour one out.
All right. Well, you're right. Toby, I hope we're not having to do that every week for sure, because it's, you know, it's sad. You lose these icons, and we've lost two in 2 weeks. That's for sure. So Rooster, you want to talk a little Major League Baseball Hall of Fame?
Yeah, let me get started. You know, there's been a lot of controversy lately about the fact that there were no members selected this year to the Hall of Fame. You know, because of baseball's past with things like the Black Sox scandal, the criteria for picking a player to be in the Hall of Fame goes way beyond statistics and performance. The electors are supposed to consider the player's ability, integrity, sportsmanship, character, and contribution to the teams on which the player played. And it's the character clause that has been in the news really every year since the steroid scandal. When about, I don't know, maybe 3-4 years ago, Joe Morgan, the great Hall of Famer from the Big Red Machine, wrote to the Hall of Fame and said that the official position of the players who are already in the Hall of Fame is that steroid users cheated and don't belong here. And that concrete position was pretty much the position that the writers took and kept out a lot of these guys like Bonds, who certainly had the stats to be in, and Roger Clemens. And again, this year, Bonds and Clemens were left off, and they were pretty quiet about it because they've been seeing this going on for years, and there's no point in speaking up. The problem is there was a third guy on the ballot this year who doesn't nearly have the statistics of Bonds or Clemens, but was a marginal candidate based on his playing days, Curt Schilling. And unlike Bonds and Clemens, Curt Schilling hasn't stayed quiet about it. He's been whining and crying about maybe he's a victim of cancel culture. The writers don't like him, and he says it's because of his politics. Well, I say he's just flat out wrong. You know, we know that Curt Schilling is a Trump supporter, and that's not why he's not in the Hall of Fame. And proof number one, the proof in the pudding, is Mariano Rivera. 2 years ago, Mariano Rivera, it was the only person in the history of the Hall of Fame who was elected unanimously. Mariano is a Republican and is an outspoken Trump supporter, has been to the White House as recently as last year to accept the Medal of Freedom Award. If Mariano's election were held tomorrow, he would still be a unanimous inductee. It has nothing to do with Curt Schilling's politics. It has to do with things like in 2016, he tweeted out an endorsement of beheading journalists that he didn't like. He ripped off a bunch of kids and the state of Rhode Island on some scam video game deal a few years ago. Without having any of the facts, he called out Adam Jones, the center fielder for the Orioles, who claimed he was hearing racial slurs from the stands. And he called Adam Jones a liar without knowing anything about it. And then last month, he tweeted his support for the treasonous mob that invaded our Capitol. So those aren't political. That's not politics. Those are anti-American stands that Curt takes. And he's just a jerk. I mean, people don't like him. And we all get judged every day based on our character. So why should it be any different for Curt Schilling? But this is a bigger picture than Curt Schilling. I've had my say on Curt Schilling. I've never liked him. I think that the bloody sock thing was a fake. But anyway,
the fact that he's a Red Sox has nothing to do with it.
Yeah. But I don't know. There's a bigger picture.
Mr. Yankee.
I come down on I would rather stick with the Joe Morgan approach and have more of a black and white rule. But I acknowledge that there is some room for some nuance in this. And for example, Pete Rose. It's never been shown that Pete Rose bet on a game that he played in. We should talk about it. Should Pete Rose be in the Hall of Fame? I think he should.
Played in or managed?
Played in.
Played in, but definitely managed.
Well, he was a player manager for a while.
He was a player manager, yeah.
Right, but he definitely bet on games when he was managing.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. But let me throw out some topics for us, and then I'll turn it over.
As long as he bet to win.
David Ortiz versus A-Rod. Ortiz's name gets mentioned in the 2003 Mitchell report, but he's never been formally accused of using steroids. And in fact, no one from the league ever told him he's tested positive for steroids, whereas A-Rod was suspended for 211 games for steroid use and continued to lie about it in the face of tremendous evidence. Then you got the Bonds, McGuire, Sosa thing. You know, I have kids who are in their late 20s and early 30s, and that was the most exciting time in baseball for them because that generation didn't really follow baseball. They were following all kinds of other sports like lacrosse. They thought baseball was boring. And the whole whole McGuire Sosa thing, particularly Sammy Sosa's happy-go-lucky, you know, personality, made baseball fun for them. But I have to tell you, I'm okay with keeping McGuire and Sosa out because I believe that but for them juicing and hitting all those home runs, they would not be Hall of Fame material. On the other hand, Bonds, who was a surly guy and no one really likes, Bonds had a Hall of Fame career before he ever decided he was going to juice and chase those two for home runs. When he was a skinny kid playing for the Pirates and a MVP, multiple MVP, he was a Hall of Fame player. Like I say, there's some nuance there. I'd be happy saying none of them get in because they cheated. But if you're going to make the argument, I'd make it for Rose and Bonds. What do you think, Chris? You're a baseball guy.
I have a couple takes on this. I mean, first of all, I think it's sad. It's sad for the game and it's sad for the country to have a year where you don't have anybody going into the Hall. And it just, again, shows the shadow that steroids continues to cast over the game, even all these years after the reckoning that baseball had with it. And there's always the argument that taking steroids doesn't help you to hit a baseball, to make contact with a baseball. Of course, the flip side of that is what a lot of old players will tell you is that, yeah, but you sure didn't have the dog days of summer when guys who weren't using steroids were getting tired in August and into September and wearing down. The guys who were using never had that. So you certainly had an advantage for them. But I want to shift a little bit. I think one of the interesting things, and it's particularly about Schilling, it kind of highlights a change in the way people look at baseball statistics, right? If you look at the old school stats like wins and ERA, Schilling's probably not a very good candidate to go into the Hall, right? Like 216 wins and a 3.46 ERA. That's not good enough to get into the Hall of Fame. It's just not.
Used to be 300 was the cutoff.
That's right. But then if you look at some of the advanced metrics, okay, and I will tell you, as much as I love baseball and pay attention, I can never remember what all this stuff is because I'm not a math guy. But you have things like ERA plus, right, which adjusts for the ballparks. I mean, Schilling spent a big part of his career in Fenway. All right, that's not exactly a pitcher-friendly ballpark to be throwing in. He had a 127 ERA plus, which is better than 42 guys who are in the Hall. Okay. And I think if I did my research right, it's like he's only like right behind Clemens on his ERA plus. So, you know, Clemens, again, going back to the steroid thing, but a guy who's looked at as a dominant pitcher. Clearly he was a dominant pitcher. and Schilling is like right behind him from that era. So you've got a lot going on here with how we value a player. You know, what statistics do you look at? How much does the steroid era come into play? And then overall, these character trait things, it's just such a mixed bag right now. And that's sad for baseball, because baseball was that sport that you were supposed to be able to look back and look at statistics and be able to compare players from every generation against each other and have a clear sense of them. And I think we're going through a really challenging time in how we gauge players versus players. And it may be, you know, look, baseball was the only sport where we did that, right? Where we really felt like we could compare a guy playing in 2021 to Babe Ruth and have a fair idea of how they stacked up against each other. Maybe those days are over for sports, and maybe it ended with the steroid era. But, the Curt Schilling thing and the Hall of Fame this year in general is just, it's just an interesting topic for a lot of different reasons. Pope, what do you think?
I mean, I think that as time goes on, it appears that from a steroid standpoint, you might have a dichotomy in thought about before 2004 and after 2005, because before 2005, there wasn't mandatory testing. And so a lot of the players who were alleged to have done steroids, it was more hearsay, you know, that they came up in a report, but there were no positive tests. And then after 2005, you know, players were on notice that if they violated the Major League Baseball steroid policy, they would probably never get in the Hall of Fame, regardless of how great they were, including, you know, breaking the all-time home run and breaking the season record for home runs. The guy we've already talked about, who was a skinny little Pittsburgh Pirate, and then he bulked up and became the San Francisco Giant beast that he was, knocking him out into McCovey Cove. So I think that as time goes on, though, you know, you might see a Rafi Palmeiro, believe it or not, get relooked at. Even he disqualified almost within the third year of voting, at less than 5%. But, you know, it was just alleged he was never. It was Jose Canseco who said that he did it. He saw him do it. But there were no positive tests for Palmeiro. You talk about Mr. Consistency. I mean, he's got the numbers that just jump out at you for not being in the Hall. So it'll be interesting as we see the next three or four classes come in. Are we going to have a hard line test, or are we maybe going to go back and take a look, whether it's the Veterans Committee or, you know, the end of the 9 or 10 year, maybe take a look at some of these guys who we automatically excluded. Maybe they get another look-see.
Guys, I think we need to get our press agents ready, because I've got a world premiere announcement to solve all of this. So I hope you guys are ready to make a lot of money for the SMQBs, open up our bar restaurant, our apparel series. The Baseball Hall of Fame, just so we're clear, is supposed to be a history museum and a Hall of Fame. And I'm telling you, I've long felt this ever since the steroid era. They need to go to Cooperstown and build a big wing with a giant asterisk over the door. I'm not kidding you. I think the Baseball Hall of Fame should have an asterisk wing in the Hall of Fame, and you should have Clemens. Well, it could be for other. You could have Betters. You could have Shoeless Joe Jackson. You could have Pete Rose, Roger Clemens, Mark McGuire, Jose Canseco, Barry Bonds, Pete Rose, Sammy Sosa, Rafael Palmeiro. These guys otherwise, you know, Rooster mentioned about Bonds and his numbers. Through 1998, Bonds batted .290 with 411 home runs, 445 steals, and already had 8 gold gloves. Before he took roids, he was a Hall of Fame player.
Multiple MVPs.
You know, Rafi had 3,020 hits, 569 home runs. They need to let the fans come in and see the story of these players. And if the players don't want to be in because they don't want the humiliation of having an asterisk because of their story, then they can say, don't put me in that wing. But I think fans should go and hear not only their stats, but their story of what the allegation is or facts are.
Well, another issue is who decides who decides whether a player goes in the asterisk wing? Big Poppy's is the example I used. There's never been a positive test, and there's never been a public accusation. There was a rumor that he was listed in the Mitchell report. And after that, that was in 2003. After that, he was the hero of the 2004 and 2007 World Series when he was clearly being tested all the time, as opposed to A-Rod, who, when he came back from his suspension, his performance fell off dramatically to the point where he was benched.
Yeah, A-Rod belongs in the asterisk wing.
Here are the members, by the way, of the 3,000-hit 500 home run club. Hank Aaron, Alex Rodriguez, Willie Mays, Rafael Palmeiro, Eddie Murray, and Albert Pujols. That's it.
Unbelievable.
And two of those guys, you know, won't go in under current, you know, circumstances.
But on the other hand, what do you say to guys like Eddie Murray and Ken Griffey Jr., who never cheated and were awesome? I agree. There needs to be an asterisk wing, and it needs to be put in context, just like we were talking about before these monuments all came down here in Richmond, that maybe that was an alternative, put up some context. There's got to be context for all this, because they cannot be treated the same as Ken Griffey Jr. That's just not fair to Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah.
I want to get back to Schilling for a second, because he just encompasses how complicated this whole issue is. He's one of, and this is the entire history of Major League Baseball, 18 pitchers to have 3,000 strikeouts. One of 18. Do you know how many are in the Hall of Fame right now? 14. Do you know the four not in the Hall of Fame? Verlander's one. He's still playing.
Clemens,
who's not getting in or whatever, Sabathia, and Kershaw.
Not eligible yet.
Who's not eligible. I think he had the third most 300 strikeout seasons in history of Major League Baseball. And I think he's got the best postseason record, right?
Does have a good postseason
record. 11-2, something like that. 11-2,
yeah.
So
I think the postseason that he and Randy Johnson has is one of the most dominating postseasons in baseball history.
Yeah. I mean, the strikeout thing, I mean, that's crazy. He and Clemens are going to end up being the two guys out on that.
But Patrick, that's a fair point. And then to bring it back to Rooster's original point, though, that Schilling is complicated. He could go either way. I think what makes so many people just hate him is when he comes out and pens a letter then and says, screw you. If you're not going to vote me in, I don't want you voting on me next time anyway.
Right.
I mean, don't take your ball and go home. You should probably be in. Okay. He should probably be in. But when you act like a jerk, when you don't get in, it just highlights all the other things that people want to point to. Yeah. So,
I don't know. I just want to say this. If someone during the World War II era was a Hall of Fame baseball player and it came out that they were sending money to the Nazis, should they be in the Hall of Fame? I think not. And when Kurt Schilling publicly supports the raid on our government to overthrow our government, to me, that's enough under the character clause to say this is America's sport.
It's complicated. I'm pretty sure Babe Ruth wouldn't make it in under the characters clause.
Maybe he wouldn't, but he drank a lot of beer. Big deal. Probably Ty Cobb wouldn't either. We're talking about
for
today.
Various
we're
reasons.
Talking about last month, Kurt Schilling backed the insurrectionists.
Does anybody here say that
in the hall?
Just so we know with our votes. Does anybody, and since we all should get a vote to every Hall of Fame in every sport,
of course we should.
Sports knowledge.
Why wouldn't we?
Who among us vote Kurt Schilling in? I'm a no.
I'm a no.
I'm a hard no.
I'm torn. I'd like to see him on the ballot one more year.
I I think his performance, absolutely, he should be in the Hall of Fame.
He was never an ace.
You can't discount the other stuff. So I don't know.
He was never the ace of a team that he was on.
I disagree
with
that.
He was 11-2 in the postseason.
He was an ace.
No, he wasn't. Not on the Red Sox. He's not on the Phillies.
I think he's the most punchable face of all the Hall of Fame.
I was going to say, I think we know if Rooster had a punchable face nominee this week, who his would be. But I think Pope, it's your turn for the nominee for punchable face.
It's this week's punchable face,
and it's it's pretty easy. Over the weekend, if you follow golf at all.
Oh, boy.
Torrey Pines, one of the best tournaments of the year. Great, great field. And Captain America raised his ugly head again. And you know who I'm talking about, Patrick Reed. The star of a few Ryder Cup teams, President's Cup teams, self-styled Captain America. But he's got a reputation, guys, as we all know, that he doesn't play by the rules. He has been alleged to be a cheater from college all the way through this weekend. In college, he hit a ball that was supposedly pretty far out in the rough, and he came up to it. This is at Georgia, came up to a ball that was closer to the fairway and was about to play it when one of his teammates called him on it, said, "Why don't you look at that ball?" And it wasn't his ball. So, you know,
we have a friend like that, don't we?
Yeah, we do. So he's already predisposed to do what he did last year. And this is a huge no-no. He's in a waste bunker at a tournament, and he improves the lie by taking his club twice in a backswing and improving the sand behind it. So he's got a little pocket so he can clip it easily and get up and down for par. This weekend, he hit a ball out of the bunker and it went left, and it hit once, it bounced up and it went into the deep, deep rough and out at Torrey Pines. Since we've actually the quarterbacks have played out there, we know how deep that rough is. It's a one shot penalty just to get out of there. And with tournament rough, it's even worse.
It's brutal.
So what does he do? He walks up, he takes a look at the ball. He asked a volunteer, he said, "Do you see it bounce?" The volunteer said, "I didn't see it." So he goes in and grabs the ball, pulls it out of what he claimed would be the embedded area. And he tells his fellow players that the ball was embedded. And he has a rules official come over and confirm that the ball was embedded. And then he gets a free drop, and lo and behold, he gets up and down for a par, goes on to win by 5 strokes. All kinds of controversy, right? Everyone, Nick Faldo, Jim Nance, Frank Nobilo, all of the commentators, all of the golf world basically said, you don't go in and grab a ball when it's a questionable call. You bring the rules official over first. It's just the way that golf is played. It's a gentleman's game. It's by honor. You make sure you get a rules official over there to make sure the ball is actually embedded. Okay. He didn't do that. The PGA exonerated him. They said he did it by the book. Well, he may have done it by the book, but everyone knows that he already has a propensity to cheat, and all he had to do was call the rules official over, and he could have cleared the issue up without going the next step. So, you know, Patrick Reed is a serial cheater, and unfortunately, as Rick Riley, who wrote a book on the former president, who is a known serial cheater in golf, says, you can tell a character of a man by the way he plays golf and the way he conducts himself on the golf course. There is no question in my mind that Patrick Reed is not a gentleman, and he deserves my punch of the week. Bam.
No.
Wow.
No, no, no.
Wow.
No.
Wow.
I disagree, and I don't understand the controversy on this. The official came over, and the official could have said to him, "You moved the ball before I looked at it. You can't do that," and assess the penalty. That's what should have happened. I mean, everybody's acting like what he did was wrong, except for the part where you say the PGA exonerated him and said he did it by the book. This is media driven drama to have a villain, a bad guy on the tour. And Reed, I mean, he's a jerk and he fits that mold. He's an easy person to not like, but I don't get this. I don't understand when the official came over and I look, there's a difference between the volunteer who he said, did you see my ball bounce? Did you see it land? And, you know, we've all seen the video. There's a difference between the volunteer and the official who he calls over, who at that point in time could have said, what are you doing? You don't move the ball before I come over here and assess the penalty. So, you know, if anybody's got a black eye this week, to me, it's the PGA. It's not Reed.
Well, Chris, you said it. He's the villain. But who do you think benefits from him being the villain? The PGA has figured out that they're never going to get another Tiger Woods. So how are they going to get ratings? One way is to have a villain. They like Patrick Reed as the villain. And I think the PGA is all over this for him being the villain for ratings reasons. And when that official came over, the ball was already long gone from this hole. And then Reed gaslights him and says, here, stick your finger in here and you just feel that there's a lip or a ridge. I mean, come on. You're right. That official should have grown a pair and said, no, this isn't right, because it isn't right. He is a cheater. Not only is he a cheater, he got kicked off the Georgia team after 1 year for stealing. So the guy's a bum.
Forget about the PGA. Forget about the PGA. Except for me, we're all a bunch of hacks here on this podcast. And when I'm playing golf with you guys, have a question, I expect milk. I expect you to say to me, hey, House, listen, do I get relief here? I think my ball's embedded. Because if you moved it, yes, I'm going to give you on your honor, but I'm going to be pissed. I'm going to be like, he moved his ball. He didn't even give me the chance. It's just, it doesn't have to be the PGA. It is a game of honor. The guy moved the ball. He's a cheat.
It should end at that.
He's a cheat. And I want to punch him in the face too.
Yeah. I mean, by the way, this guy, he's completely hated on the PGA Tour. It's so obvious. I mean, all these players are being nice in their quotes, but you could just tell. I mean, from what I hear, did they win one or two national championships at, where did he end up?
Augusta State. Augusta State. Yeah,
I think his players, the guys on the team hate him now, and he won two national championships for them. I mean, it's ridiculous. He got lucky here because he didn't break the rule or whatever, but it's just you got that much heat on you and that much background, you go and ask an official before you do anything.
Hey guys, can I put an early chip in for next week to punch Tom Brady's face? Can I just put that down now?
Absolutely. No.
But if the Bucks win, we punch your face.
Good to see you guys.
Big week. We got a big week ahead. I mean, Patrick, your life could change. By the time we do this next week, you could be a Super Bowl champion. I mean, not you, but
two-time Super Bowl champion. Let's not forget.
It's going to be more than long week. No more than five White Claws for you next
weekend.
Wait,
that's important. Hold on, though. We got to end. We got a couple seconds here. There is a lot riding on this, because if you do win, then that means only one SMQB is in the solo Super Bowl club.
That's correct.
That's a big thing.
Wow.
House, you're going to be left behind. I mean, there's more at reason for you to root for Kansas City.
Are we counting Trent Dilfer and Brad Johnson? Or whatever. Who?
Win is a win, baby.
Listen, I mean,
did we count
Derek Brooks?
Nick?
You either
are
have
we counting? Are we counting 2-9-7 Bonde victories Barber, from Eli? John 9-7 Lynch? Teams with Eli?
You either have multiple Super Bowls or you don't.
It's kind of a black and white thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're coming with Nick Sirianni.
This just raised this up the ante now.
I love it.
All right. Good luck,
Milk. All right. Good luck.
Good luck, Milk. Good luck. Right, Milk. Talk to y'all next week.